It is Wednesday, February 13, 2019. Welcome back to another episode of the MMA Reporters. As always, a lot to discuss. Last week, we were almost celebrating the fact that at UFC 234, it was all so clean and nice. Middleweight tournament, a mini tournament, if you will, Saturday night with Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva fighting in the co-main event, and then Robert Whittaker versus Kelvin Gastelum. We were celebrating the fact that it was all so clean, that for the first time in a long time, we knew what the stakes were in a particular division. We didn't have to hear about complaining and campaigning for title shots. It was all just set in stone. And then, of course, Saturday afternoon, we find out that Robert Whittaker is out due to a collapsed bowel and an internal hernia. Gastelum doesn't fight. He shows up with the belt. He's parading around. Everyone hates him for it. Adesanya beats Silva. It's a mess of a situation. It's like every division now. Some good news, though, just broke this moments ago before we came in here to tape the show. According to Robert Whittaker's manager, Titus Day, Robert has been released from a local hospital in Melbourne, and they are hopeful that he can return to action this summer between June and August. June would probably be best case scenario. August probably a realistic scenario. And so with that, let me say hello to today's panel for the first time joining us. So we continue our trend of a different panel each and every week. We've got Phil Murphy returning back-to-back weeks for the big
back
man, Phil.
Back-to-back.
How about that?
Feeling good, man.
A very casual Phil Murphy.
Yes.
You guys don't see this, but usually he's like all suited up. Today he's wearing his sweatpants. You've gone from like one extreme to the next.
I am. I'm about to get on a flight.
Okay.
So I don't fly and formally. I fly very, very comfortably because
yes.
I'm not a small man.
Sure.
So whenever I get on a plane, I'm just going to sweat. So I wear things that I can, you know, just relax.
Where are we going?
Be comfortable. I'm going to Charlotte, NBA All-Star.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm jealous. All right. Well, before you go on the plane, you're joining us. I appreciate that.
Of course.
Back by popular demand, the one and only New York Rick in the house. I noticed last time you were on, I called you Eric, which was a weird thing. You're New York Rick. Welcome.
Eric, New York Rick, you call me whatever you want. We're like that. We're on
yes,
that basis.
We are.
I will say, response to the show in general has been very positive. It's great and it's encouraging. I get about 80%. On my social media channels, hey, great job, love the show, love Ariel, love you on there. The 20% that's not fully positive, all they're saying is, where's New York Rick?
Yeah.
He's right here.
He's the people's
champ.
So
hopefully this completes and appeases all of the audience, that we have everyone, if not, you know, New York Rick's here. So that should finish
yes,
the last 20%.
I'm calling off the dogs. We're okay. I'm here.
He loves this. He loves when people, you know, go on social media and ask where he is. He never addresses it. He just lets it linger. That's his thing. So it's good to have him here, and we won't have to get those tweets for 1 week. Guys, I'm looking forward to this week because, like I said, a lot going on. Let's get into 234 talk because we've had a few days now to digest what happened on Saturday and perhaps more accurately, what didn't happen on Saturday. So now, Phil, let me ask you first. You're the UFC. You have a tough situation on your hands here, right? Because it was all so clean. It was shaping up to be the Israel Adesanya-Robert Whittaker fight. We talked about this last week, how huge that would be in Australia. You could sell it, Etihad Stadium, New Zealand versus Australia, all that stuff and more. Now it's not the case. If you're the UFC, what are you doing with the top of the middleweight division?
If I'm the UFC, and I know it's what I tell you to do if I were me,
yeah,
I would...
No, I'm saying if you are UFC president, Phil Murphy, right now,
yeah,
they're asking you to fix this.
Yeah, in terms of competitive equity, I wouldn't strip Robert. Collapsed bowel, that's two words that should never, ever go together. And certainly, it's not something that... Man, I don't know about you guys. If my bowel is collapsed, I'm not hanging on to that for weeks at a time. That's something that as soon as I feel it, oh no, I'm going to the hospital. And it seems like, unfortunately, well, I guess in the long term, fortunately, he didn't step into the octagon with that going on. That was detected. It's just unfortunate for him. It was at the 11th hour. And I must say, he's getting a lot of, you know, negative emotion for that. I feel bad for him because a lot of that, I think, is as a result of the card being thin, that was the centerpiece to the card. And people are reacting negatively that he was taken off the show. But he had nothing to do with the rest of the depth of that card. So I say all that. I know it technically wasn't a title defense because there was Romero missed weight, but
mm-hmm,
he effectively defended his title in June. Your reporting is telling us that he could be ready. Best case scenario, June, more realistically, July, August. It's 12 months, 13 months, maybe 14 months. I wouldn't strip him. You have Israel Adesanya, who looked fantastic against Anderson Silva. He's fought five times in the last 12 months. It's not the worst thing to give him some time off. So I say, if it's me, we run back Whitaker Gastelum either on the Chicago card in June, International Fight Week, maybe as a co-main, something of that nature, and use that as an opportunity to build up Robert Whitaker, to build that star a little bit if it is International Fight Week, and then have Adesanya be the de facto number one contender, fight for the title late fall, winter.
And so Adesanya is sitting on the sidelines.
He is.
Not fighting anyone until the winner of that
fight.
I mean,
if he comes out and says, I want to fight someone, then that's his prerogative. I think right now he would be the number one contender, and it wouldn't be the worst thing for him to take 8-9 months off after having fought 5 times in 12 months. But he seems to like fighting, and he doesn't have he's 14 career fights? So in the interim, if he wants to further build something, but I honestly would put the ball in his court there. He's earned a title shot with how he's started just run through the middleweight division and his marketability. That's part of it as well. This isn't a pure meritocracy, but with how he's performed in the octagon, how he's sold himself, he's earned a title shot in my mind. He doesn't need to do more, but if he wants to fight even as a co-main or not, say whatever card Whitaker Gastelum goes on, if he wants to be elsewhere on that card and face pick your top five middleweight as an actual number one contender spot, then should something happen to Rob or Kelvin, then you sub in Israel. And maybe that's what I would do.
I'm going fast track Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whitaker as soon as he's healthy. I just think from Israel Adesanya's perspective, he's coming from kickboxing. He's used to fighting every week, on the way up in those ranks. So I don't think the time off thing is something that he needs. I think this is the schedule of regularity that he would kind of actually look to based on his background. As far as marketability, there's no doubt in my mind that Israel Adesanya is more marketable than Kelvin Gastelum. All due respect to Kelvin Gastelum, a rightful number one contender, a rightful challenger for the title shot against Robert Whitaker, but it's hard to deny the star power of Israel Adesanya. For Gastelum, tough, but I think if I'm the promotion, I've got to make him swallow another number one contender fight. Maybe running it back with somebody like Chris Weidman, something like that, and then put Izzy into the title shot.
So how do you justify this?
I need to sell pay-per-views. That's the justification.
So you're not in the feelings business?
Not if I'm the UFC. Now, personally, I think that, as I said, Gastelum's a rightful contender, earned his challenger spot, should have that held, but as we know, none of those are in stone, and I think Israel Adesanya's star is shining too bright.
How do you feel about this, Phil?
My one counterpoint, and again, I said this isn't a pure meritocracy. I don't hate the idea of Adesanya cutting in line, mostly because I want to see that fight really badly against Robert Whitaker. I would say if we're trying to sell pay-per-views, I don't know if we're saying June is best case scenario that he comes back. If I'm him and if I'm his camp and if I'm the UFC for the sake of insurance, I might book that in July. And I don't think Whitaker Adesanya is headlining International Fight Week. It's a great co-main. But I think you need one of the AA list guys now, whether it's John Jones, whether it could be Jones DC3, something along those lines.
Connor.
Connor, he said, I think he reported he's itching to get back in the octagon. So some A-list guy there, Whitaker against pick your opponent, whether it's Adesanya or Gastelum as the co-main. The pay-per-view driver isn't going to be Whitaker in that scenario. So that would be my one counterpoint, that Whitaker as the A-side in his first official title defense isn't going to move the needle too much on pay-per-view buys now, but you use this as an opportunity to sell the next fight.
So I'm happy that you said that, New York Rick, because that's exactly the reason, that line of thinking is exactly the reason why I thought Kelvin Gastelum played it perfectly on Saturday, because everyone was looking at it on the surface. Everyone was all up in arms. How dare he parade around with that title? How dare he call himself champion? He is so rude towards Robert. He's not showing any compassion, all this stuff. He was getting killed on social media, right? And he's a pretty down the road kind of guy. No one really feels one way or the other about Kelvin Gastelum. He doesn't talk a lot of trash, but on Saturday he was, public enemy number one. And it's because of that line of thinking. He was doing that because he was a desperate man, because he saw the writing on the wall, because he knew that the UFC was going to try to skip him over. So he had to almost put it out there into the ether that no, I am the champ. I showed up to work. He didn't show up to work. In my world, the wrestling world, when you don't show up, the other guy wins, right? So that's why he was doing it. And I was surprised that I'm not surprised the fans didn't get it. I'm surprised fellow fighters, coaches didn't quite get it. The guy was actually trying to convince the UFC that he is worthy of now getting another chance. I don't know how. I mean, The UFC does things all the time that ruffle people's feathers. They have a business to run. At the end of the day, there's no denying that Adesanya fighting for the belt is a bigger title fight than Gaslam fighting for the belt, regardless of the other side. I just don't know how you tell the guy who literally did everything that you asked, who did the Ultimate Fighter, who flew to Australia, who was there, who weighed in with staph infection, with all kinds of stuff all over his body, and was ready to fight. And now you're going to tell him, unless you're paying him off to sit like they did with Carlos Condit back at 143, I mean, this creates a pretty sticky situation, does it not?
The same way you tell Colby Covington, if you're not ready on this date, you're not fighting. The same way you've told fighters
but
in the past.
But he is ready on that date. He's ready to go.
Yeah, I agree. It's not exactly the same circumstances, yeah. But there have been times where you've been guaranteed a number one contendership and not had it. A fight has fallen off and you've been skipped over. It's not new territory. And unfortunately, I think Kelvin gets the short end of the stick on this one.
Wow. That would be something. Now, he's lucky, or they're lucky, I should say, that he doesn't have like this passionate following, because I don't know if everyone would be up in arms, but you know how the Twitter Rotzi likes to go. Like they get up in arms about things that, you know, like just random things all the time. So I feel like they would get up in arms about this.
He may have unintentionally done something in his favor,
oh.
Which is alluding to, I just alluded to Colby Covington. You don't necessarily need to be loved to get into the title shot. Sometimes being hated is something that will mm-hmm. get you there. And I don't think he's earned himself any fans with this act that he did on Saturday. So I think that may be something that does work in his favor down the line. I just don't see how you can deny Adesanya and that right now.
Can I throw something out?
Please.
Why not do Gaslam versus Adesanya, interim title, and just look, his manager just told me June, August, right? Timetable. Yeah. You just said it yourself, Phil. Collapsed bowel? That sounds like
doesn't
the worst thing
good.
In the world. So as of right now, they told me that he has been released from the hospital, but he's in a considerable amount of pain and he can't fly home until Monday at the earliest. He had a collapsed bowel. He had an internal hernia. Last year, he had a staph infection in his stomach. He had chicken pox. This man has been through a lot. I don't feel comfortable with the idea of him fighting in 4 or 5 months. So why not just do Adesanya Gaslam, interim belt, and then have him, or the winner of that fight, fight Robert Whittaker? And I know what you're going to say, interim titles mean nothing. They've been passed around like Halloween candy. Everyone hates the idea of the interim title. You roll your eyes when you say that word. But here's the thing. The UFC only has themselves to blame for that, because this is exactly why you need an interim title. This is why they instituted the interim title when Dominic Cruz was hurt. This is why they instituted the interim title when Brock Lesnar had diverticulitis. It's exactly in this instance that an interim title makes sense. The problem is they devalued the significance of that belt. But had they not done that, don't you agree that an interim title is actually just in this particular instance?
I would agree with that, but I would say the reason you asked the question that you started with was, why don't you do that? And you don't do that because you squash Israel Adesanya's star power potentially with a loss.
How are you squashing it?
It's a dangerous fight for Israel
with
Adesanya.
A loss. Yeah,
with
but a loss. You can squash it with a loss in any instance.
And
any
sure, fight. Sure. But as you've seen with Kelvin, he's the perfect example. When you have that title opportunity, you push them into that fight. It's the same thing here. Like, you don't want to have Israel Adesanya carrying around the interim belt that means nothing now. You have to wait for that opportunity for him to fight for the title, and you don't do it on a potential risky fight against Kelvin Gastelum, who's very, very dangerous, and some would say pretty much a good style against Israel Adesanya's style. So I would stay away from that.
I would lean away from it. I wouldn't detest it as much as I have some other interim titles in the past, because I agree with you that it is, if there were a time that it would be justified, it's this, where you have a guy who was the number one contender for circumstances completely outside of his control, wasn't able to fight for a title, and then a guy who the public demand is seeming to get behind in Israel Adesanya, and a champion who is on the shelf for at least another 4 months, likely 5 or 6 months. So from that vantage point, it seems if we're going to do any interim titles, this is the time to do it. I just agree with New York Rick in a sense that it just feels like it's a high risk, low reward fight for Adesanya. I think his next fight should be for the title, whether that's in July at International Fight Week as a co-main event, or if that is in October, November, December as a title fight against the Gastelum-Whitaker winner, presuming they would have fought at International Fight Week. Mm.
It feels to me like the ship has sailed on stripping Robert. Like, what about stripping him? Because if you were going to strip him, you had to do it on Saturday. Now there's no point in stripping him. Like, I would not have hated it, as callous as it may have felt, if they, you know, tossed to a Dana White interview backstage, hey, you know, we just found out Robert's going to be, you know, out for at least a year since his last fight. Serious, we don't want to rush him. He's guaranteed his next fight will be for the belt, but we need to move along, so we're deciding to strip him, and the winner of the co-main event, he'd do this like on ESPN before, the winner of the co-main event is going to fight Kelvin Gastelum for the belt later on this year. I feel like you could have gotten away with that on Saturday. I feel at this point now it seems a little bit weird to do it. Would that have been a crazy, like, that doesn't seem like it was discussed or even considered? Would you guys have hated that if they did it?
I don't know if they would have let him out of Australia if he
Dana?
Did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's to me, that's far less palatable than an interim title. And I agree that you missed your window to do that. It was Saturday or Sunday. Had the diagnosis come back today that he's out, needed some kind of severe surgery, he's out until October, November, December, then yeah, because it would have been well more than a year since his last fight. But given the fact that his timetable is a year to come back, it's a tough situation for the UFC. But I would prefer, if it were interim title, Gastelum Adesanya, or stripping Robert and making that the full unified belt, I think in the back of everyone's mind, they would know that the true champion, at least today, at the moment, the snapshot is Robert Whittaker. And so I would prefer an interim title to stripping Rob.
Yeah, I don't think you can do it at this point. It's also interesting if you think back at the way Dana White has talked about various people for pulling out of fights or being out of fights. The way he talked about Robert Whittaker was glowingly. Mm. You know, this guy wanted to go. He could have died if he gotten hit. He was creating a mythology around Robert Whittaker's injury. That's not typically the type of guy that they're going to strip. He's the gamer. He's the one who wanted to be in there. It seems like he's not going to be out that long. You're reporting, you know, that he'll be back in the summer. I think the window has closed on that, and I don't think it was ever even in consideration.
What did you make of Dana doing that? Because I think that was interesting as well. In the past, he hasn't done that. In the recent past, right? Amanda Nunes comes to mind.
Yeah. I think it was telling of what they think about Robert Whittaker and how they value Australia in particular, because if you're coming back there, it doesn't help you to kill Robert Whittaker's star power, even though you have somebody from New Zealand like Israel Adesanya. I think they want to keep Whittaker in the fold. And also, this was really out of his control. It's a situation where the guy was on the brink of death, apparently, as has been said. So I think that they're keeping him happy and the organization still happy with him.
In the co-main event with Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva, who did we learn more about in that fight? Did we learn more about Israel Adesanya? Like, has he arrived because he beat Anderson Silva? Or did we learn more about Anderson Silva in the sense that, hey, he maybe isn't as quote-unquote old as we thought. Maybe he can hang. Maybe he can beat some guys. Maybe not someone who's 14 years younger than him, but if you put him in there against a fellow 40-year-old or a 38-year-old, maybe he can hang. I mean, like, after that fight was over, what were you thinking about?
I thought Anderson Silva proved that he still belongs in the UFC, even though he turns 44 in April, and that he wants to fight at Curitiba in May. I think he should be on that card, whether that's his one for the road or not. I think he's still at a point where, given his performance at UFC 234, he should be able to dictate that. It's not like late Chuck Liddell, UFC 115, where, okay, well, you've had your run, now it's time. I'm not thinking that at all with Anderson Silva. But I still learned more about Israel Adesanya in a tactful decision. That was the perfect opportunity for him to go for the highlight reel knockout, build up his profile. Now he's in the main event of a pay-per-view. And I thought he fought a very smart fight. He didn't try to be the hero, didn't overextend, which I think is what Anderson was looking for him to do. So once, you know, he was going with a lot of leg kicks just to try and slow Silva down. To me, that's the type of IQ fight where if Adesanya goes into that fight with that game plan 10 times, he wins that fight 10 times. So I'm saying, okay, this kid, it just isn't naturally gifted and fast as all get out. He's got a good game plan behind him, and he's got high fighter IQ, and he's very disciplined in the octagon. So that's what I learned from Adesanya, and it made me think this guy could be holding the real deal legit belt someday.
Also learned about Israel Adesanya, and definitely agree with everything you said, Phil. My one caveat to that, or addition to that, is that I do think if he was a little more aggressive, if he did have a bit of a different game plan, that he would have been able to take Anderson Silva out. I really do think there was a bit of, not necessarily holding back. I wouldn't say that. I don't think that was it. But I do think that he knew Anderson Silva's trick so well that he was too concerned about them and was so worried about countering them that he didn't do what he has done in previous fights. I've seen him fight a lot on the kickboxing scene. I've watched all of his MMA fights. I really think Anderson Silva at this point in his career is somebody he could have finished. That said, the game plan that he executed was one that was safe and one that he will win that fight, preserve that title shot. But I did learn that if you want to beat Israel Adesanya at this point, you probably should cozy up to him, because otherwise you're in trouble if you're standing there with
so
him.
So the crying worked. I was worried the crying would work like even worse than that for Israel and would actually make him like Pat Barry, Mirko Krokop back out.
I think it was less about the crying, although that definitely affected him, as we saw with his backstage interview with Brett, Israel's backstage interview with Brett. That is, I think it was more that he knew everything in Anderson's arsenal. He idolized him, and he had seen these things so many times that he was preparing for that and countering for that rather than executing a straightforward game plan that he wanted to, where he was just going to steamroll him. I truly believe at this point, if we do that again and it's fighter X instead of Anderson Silva, that Israel Adesanya finishes that fight.
Okay, so you said that you've seen him before, like you've been watching him. You're the Israel Adesanya guru. You keep talking. Every time you talk about Israel Adesanya, he always mentions, "Oh, I watched him in kickboxing." Blah 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 blah. Okay, so I knew that you were going to do that. Did you enjoy that fight? Because I had some people on Twitter say to me, like, "That was awesome," and then had some other people say, like, "That fight sucked. That felt like a sparring match."
No, I absolutely enjoyed that fight. Didn't feel like it was a sparring match. Do think that on second watching, and I've watched it a few times now, it wasn't as close as I think some people have been
Agreed.
Thinking that it was. It was a pretty clear decision for Israel. He didn't look like he was in much danger, as Phil mentioned. Like, the game plan was sound. Like, that was a game plan that Israel could execute in his sleep. But no, I enjoyed it very much, and I thought Anderson Silva had his moments in a way that somebody his age coming back from that long a layoff probably doesn't. So credit to him, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it wasn't Pat Barry Czech Congo, but it was a very technically sound, enjoyable watch for me, and it's one that at some point down the road for Israel Adesanya, when I'm going and watching fight tape of him getting ready to cover one of his future fights at some point, I'm not going to have feelings of, oh, I got to see this Silva fight again. I thought it was enjoyable, but I could see how, you know, a fan who is looking for a knockout or looking for at least more aggression out of the fighters might not appreciate it, but I enjoyed it. I was working college basketball live during the fight, and that's where my eyes were on every commercial break was that fight. I was locked in.
Yes, I popped at home, pro wrestling term. They threw to you, and you were doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I know that guy, but I was kind of hoping that they'd say, like, you know, MMA reporters, panelists, Phil Murphy standing by, like, where's the rub?
I wish, man. I told them, put that on the topic bar.
Yeah, you know,
I'm
would have been nice.
I'm too low on the basketball food chain right now. We'll get there.
Okay, but that was a cool spot for you. Well done.
Yeah, man.
I enjoyed every second of it. I thought it was fun. Look, I like the antics. I like them when it doesn't feel like it's a sparring match, right? When it's a lot of hugging, when it's a lot of bowing and stuff like that. But in this case, it was like, hey, anything you can do, I can do better. Come hit me. There was a little bit of trash talk. At the end, there was some respect. I loved the scene of him at the end being like, I got the DVDs. I bought the DVDs, UFC 90. Mm-hmm. He was like a little fan. But in that moment, he wanted to kill his idol. I loved it.
They clearly saved the respect for the end. They were not looking to play patty cake in there.
Anderson wanted to win that fight.
Anderson wanted to win that fight, and Israel wanted to win that fight, too.
But think there was something internal?
Yeah, I don't think he was holding back. I just think that if that wasn't the face, those weren't the tactics that he was looking for, he would have finished him. He was watching the DVDs for so long that I think that affected it, yeah.
If it went two more rounds, if it was a five-round main event, do you think it goes any different?
No. I think he sticks to that same game plan and outpoints him 50-45.
Yeah, I think it's 50-45, 49-46. You know, whoever gave 29-28, they're scoring that 49-46. I think Adesanya would have done just more of the same.
So what do you think about what Anderson was saying afterwards? Okay, him fighting Curitiba, I think we all agree. Great. Why not? It makes sense. Nick Diaz, Conor McGregor. Now, I understand why he's still going after the Conor thing. Conor started that. Mm-hmm. But Nick Diaz, can I just say, like, and I just said this on Ariel the Bad Guy, which, by the way, you can catch on ESPN+. Plus. It was a great show. I should plug that more often on this show because this is free and that one's not. But can we please just leave Nick Diaz alone? Once and for all, can we leave the man alone? Enough. I don't want to hear anyone call him out. I don't want to hear the UFC talk about booking him. I don't want to hear any rumors about any Nick Diaz fights. It is very clear if you look at his social media that this man has no interest in fighting. He doesn't have to fight. He has given us enough. He's not in that mindset. He doesn't want to hurt people. He has always had mixed feelings about fighting. Please just leave Nick Diaz alone, especially Anderson Silva. You beat him. Now, I know you got, you know, in trouble afterwards and the win was taken away. You beat him in the fight. Why are you asking for this fight again? Why are you campaigning for this? I don't think anyone is the only reason why people may be clamoring for this is because they miss Nick Diaz. Do you really care to see Nick Diaz back? Like, what about this idea that Anderson is throwing out? Nick Diaz versus Anderson Silva 2.
I care to see Nick Diaz back. I don't care if it's against Anderson Silva or anybody. You nailed it. The nostalgia is what is, you know, causing people to react to this. It's not anything about Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz as a matchup. It's about seeing Nick Diaz. But Nick Diaz said it best himself, and I might be messing up the quote. He said, I don't want to fight. I'm here to party.
I don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like as simple as that, right?
Yeah, that's it. He clearly isn't in it. And even when he was in it, he wasn't really in it. Everything about it was he wasn't into the violence and he wasn't into hurting people. It was just a means to an end. It seems like he's done with this.
My thought, and I'm probably going a couple of logical steps down the line. He'll be 44 at that card. Seems to have all his faculties physically in a good spot with his career and his legacy set. And he's thinking, how much longer do I want to do this? Curitiba isn't a terrible time to take off the gloves for your post-fight interview. And if he wants to go out with a fight that people care about and that he feels confident winning, it's a short list because I don't think he's in a place. He hung with Adesanya, but like I said, I'm taking Adesanya with that game plan 10 times out of 10. I'm looking through the rest of the names at middleweight that would resonate, and I don't know against how many of those I'm picking Anderson Silva at age 44. So if he's thinking, maybe this is it for me, I need a fight that people care about, and I want a fight I want to win, yeah, I'm Nick Diaz, I think it checks the boxes.
Do you want to see that fight?
I would watch it, yeah.
You're interested in that?
I mean,
why?
For me, it's for the reasons I said. I would want to see him, if that's his line of thinking, that he wants to go out with a win and that would be his last fight, then yeah, I would want to see Anderson Silva getting his hand raised in his last fight. I don't want to see him, I mean, he beat Nick Diaz, overturned, beat Derek Brunson. I didn't think he won that fight. His last win before that, Stephen Bonner. And so we're getting pretty far removed, and I don't want him to go out with loss at the end of his career. So it's more for who it isn't than who it is as to why I'd want to see that fight.
And that's why I would say I saw Dana White talking to someone before UFC 234. I don't remember who, so I apologize for that. It might have been Brett, but I really don't remember. And he said, look, at the UFC, we want fighters who want to be champions, who want to fight for the belt. If you don't want that, we have proven in the past that we will let you go. We will release you. They did it with Frank Mir. They did it with Chael Sonnen. Now, those guys all had, you know, USADA issues, but they'll let you go, right? That's what he was saying. Don't you think at this point, it's never going to happen, but don't you think at this point Anderson Silva is actually better off in Bellator? Scott Coker books these kind of situations better than the UFC in the sense that the UFC is all about killing you off, right? And they should be. That's the way the fight game goes. BJ Penn, we're going to take Yair Rodriguez and kill you off, right? That's the way they do it. And that's how you build stars, Israel Adesanya, Anderson Silva. Bellator is all about, like, how do we get the best ratings on this night? So, hey, Anderson versus Chael Sonnen 3. You tell me you don't watch that? And you tell me that's not a winnable fight for Anderson Silva? You don't, like, that's a much more winnable fight than any situation he's going to be in the UFC. So I feel like he needs to fight a fight like that. I just don't want to see Nick Diaz come back. I don't want to have a situation where we're dragging Nick Diaz back just for the money, and he's going to go in there and not take this seriously, and he's going to be a shell of his former self, and it's going to be sad to watch. There's enough guys out there. There's enough older guys out there. Vitor Belfort. I mean, there's enough older guys out there for him to fight.
Yeah, I agree. As a fit, if we're looking at the general MMA landscape as a whole, to me, that's the fit. If I'm Anderson Silva and I'm considering my legacy and not thinking about how I can extend this career as long as it goes, but really getting meaningful fights in, I go for the gusto and I ask for Chris Weidman and I try and do number three. I try and get one up on him before
I'm down
I go.
For that. I'm down for that.
Chris Weidman's on a bit of a skid himself. If I'm Anderson Silva, I'm salivating. I'm looking at that and going, This is my chance right here. If I can get one on him and then walk away, I've pretty much done it.
I'm in on that.
Does Chris do it in Brazil? Would he go down there to fight him?
I think he needs some money for that. I think he needs a little bit of a greasing of the palms. But what about it? You like that idea? Do you want to see a third fight?
I'm not clamoring to see a third fight with Weidman.
You like the Nick Diaz fight better than the Weidman fight?
I can't get the floppy leg out of my head from the second one.
But doesn't that give you more, you know,
there's more meaning attached.
Because the second one, let's say we throw that away, the first one you could say, oh, I was clowning around. This is the one that I'm going to take it seriously and not get injured.
Yeah, but we're talking fights of meaning for Silva. I just don't see a scenario in which he can climb the ladder. His opportunity, had he upset Adesanya on Saturday, Sunday in Melbourne, then he would be in line for a shot. Either he'd be in that mess with Gastelum.
But Whitaker. I don't think he's saying about climbing the ladder. I think he's talking about
fights of meaning.
No, like, just a retirement
in
fight.
In the sense of legacy. This guy's got two up on me. Let me get that one back.
Yeah, if that's his one for the road, I would say to that.
The guy who ended his reign, he gets that one leg up on him and then walks away. I also think it's worth pointing out, and Phil, you mentioned this earlier, is that these fights have been, you know, close. You mentioned the Brunson fight could have gone either way. You didn't score it for him. But it's not like Anderson Silva is getting blown out here.
Right.
The fight against Bisping, the fight against Brunson. Cormier might have been the only one where I was like, okay, clearly he's not winning this fight, but
he's not getting knocked out like Chuck.
He steps in on short notice against
he was
the light heavyweight champion.
199 for the weigh-in or 201 or whatever he was.
I think that Silva still has stuff in the gas tank, and I think we saw that at UFC 234. To me, it's Weidman versus Silva.
I like
that's what I want.
Your facial expression says you're very excited about that fight.
I am into it. I'm into it.
Why do you like it?
The intrigue of the storyline. As you said, the first one was marred by the fact that he was clearly clowning. Let me not take credit away from Chris Weidman. There will be people that will say the first one was marred by him clowning. The second one, we all know what happened with his leg. I think that the timing lines up for this perfectly with the way their careers have gone since then. There's been no better time to do it. While Chris Weidman was still reigning and on top, there was never a chance for Anderson Silva to get that one back. Now is the time, in my opinion.
Redemption. I like it.
I like it too. And Weidman needs a big fight. Like, I don't know if he's going to get a big fight right now at 185, right? If he goes to 205, maybe he'll get something fresh. But this is a big time fight.
Huge.
Yeah. And it's something that could kickstart something for him. His only win in his last five fights was that win over Gastelum.
Can we agree, though, to leave Nick Diaz alone once and for all? Please.
Let him party.
Let him party.
Let him party unless he wants to fight Anderson Silva,
right.
Which I don't think he does.
Unless he comes out and says, I'm ready, leave him alone.
He did the opposite of that.
There was all kinds of things happening on Saturday. Conor McGregor went on Twitter as well, and he's like picking. Like, all of a sudden, we've gone from Conor saying, beg me, to Conor saying, I'll fight him on the same night. I'll go to Brazil. He really seems to have this thing for fighting in Brazil, which is somewhat bizarre for me, but maybe he likes fighting in hostile territory. And it reminds me of the early days of Conor. Remember there was one time where Diego Sanchez was left without an opponent for the Mexico card, and he's like, I'm going to fight Diego Sanchez in Mexico. He was wanting to fight everyone every week. And it reminds me of that Conor. And for me, it makes me think that Conor is ready to come back. He's itching to come back. He misses fighting, and he recognizes he needs a win. What do you guys make of this new Conor, who is no longer taking the approach of, like, I'm above this all, come beg me, come ask nicely, come kiss the ring? Now he's just, like, calling everyone out left and right. What do you make of this switch?
For me, it's a lot like the Conor we've always known. He wants to do things on his own terms, his own timing. I mean, how many stories have you done with him where he just misses whatever time he says he's going to be there? We see him at press conferences on his own schedule. Brett and I did a story with him for the magazine years ago, and we just had to hang out and wait. That was what we were told to do by his manager at the time, Tom Egan, was Conor will let us know when he wants to go to the gym. So I think now he's bored. Now he wants to fight again, and he's ready to come back. So that's why he's trying to dictate the terms, start fights, say things on social media, tweet at this fighter, that fighter, and say he's ready to rock, and then he'll sit there and look at the landscape and see what's the most fiscally beneficial fight for him, what's going to make the most money, and go for it. And I miss the guy. I miss when he was fighting every few months and winning fights. We haven't seen him win since, again, November 2016. So it would be nice to see one of the better pound-for-pound fighters on the planet get back in the octagon and do what he does best.
Yeah, it's a different approach, clearly. But I think it's the same result. There's really no difference in what will ultimately happen, whether it's you come line up and kiss the rings or I'm calling everybody out and then ultimately they'll present me the options and I'll choose. There's really no difference. It's just the same. It's a different approach, but ultimately Connor is, it's Connor's world, as Cowboy once said. And
why do you gotta bring that up again? I'm trying to move on from all this, all right?
Ariel was so mad about that.
What do you mean?
What the how Cowboy was, you know, if you do me the honor.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
But he's not wrong in the sense that it is Connor's world. And so even though I would say there's a little bit of the mystique gone from the idea of Connor being in the throne and saying, come to me, and present yourself. It seems a little more desperate from an outward perspective, but it's also engagement, interest. Everything is being driven by Connor. So ultimately, regardless of how he gets there, it will be a competition for who gets to fight Connor next, and he will be selecting that.
Okay, so if you guys are advising him, and I know we kind of talked about Max Holloway versus Cerrone as far as like the two options, but now he's talked about Anderson Silva again. There's the Nate Diaz trilogy fight that he mentioned as well on Twitter. There's the Max Holloway thing, which, by the way, of everyone, the only one he hasn't talked about is Max Holloway as of late, which I find very interesting. There's the Donald Cerrone thing. There's anyone under the sun. If you're advising Conor McGregor right now, and we're shooting for International Fight Week, July, Las Vegas, who are we picking?
If I'm Conor McGregor, I think the fight that gets the most intrigue is probably Max Holloway. Mm. He's a champion, have him come up to 155. Max clearly isn't opposed to it. He's out there touring Jameson, talking about it's the finest Irish whiskey out there. We did a story on ESPN.com this week, who should Conor fight next? From that vantage point of considering UFC hierarchy, given the fact that Conor has gone so long without a win, and he's someone who I think the public's starting to wane on his importance in the greater MMA picture because they haven't seen him fight for so long, I'm thinking Donald Cerrone. That was my pick in the story, was I said Donald Cerrone. It's a fight. It's a guy with name value. It's a matchup I like for Conor, and it just gets that win for him, that ever-important win, so he can justify then saying, okay, I should get another crack at Khabib. And I know Tony Ferguson's going to have something to say about that, and just down the line of lightweights who are on win streaks will say something about that. But those would be my two. It would be either Max Holloway, just because of the prestige of a de facto super fight, even though Conor's not a champion. You have a champion changing weights to take on someone. Sorry, I hit the microphone with my nose there. Or Cowboy Cerrone.
You got to pick one. Can't fight two guys on the same night.
Well, back at UFC 4,
yes,
you could.
That's true.
I'll go Cowboy just to stay true to what I said in the story.
So if you're Connor, if you're his team, you're saying let's pick Cowboy.
Yeah, because then that puts me in line to fight Khabib.
2 weeks ago, we sat not in this room but a room adjacent, and I picked Max Holloway as the biggest fight for Conor McGregor. I've not waned from that opinion, and in fact, based on that story that was on ESPN.com, there was a poll by ESPN MMA that got 20,000 respondents, and Max Holloway, with 43%, was leading that poll. So not only do I think
who
it has...
the options?
Max Holloway, Conor McGregor, Cowboy Cerrone, Nate Diaz, and Anderson Silva.
Right. I'm shocked that Nate Diaz didn't win.
Nah, I think Nate has lost that.
The biggest mainstream fight, if they announced today that Conor McGregor is fighting Nate Diaz, I guarantee you SportsCenter, all the people in this company that are sort of not really sure how they feel about MMA or maybe just don't know enough, they all know about that rivalry. Mm-hmm. That's the one. They don't know who Max Holloway is, right? They don't know who Donald Cerrone is. They know the Nate Diaz-Conor McGregor feud. They know that he tapped out Conor. Nate did. They know about the rematch. I think that's the one that creates the most buzz.
I would argue that
They probably don't even know that Nate hasn't fought for the last 2.5 years.
Well, that's the thing. Max Holloway has been taking people out and walks around with a strap. Meanwhile, Nate Diaz has been doing nothing since the Conor McGregor fight. So when you're telling that story, that's great when you announce it, but what about after that? What is Nate Diaz going to do in the promotion of the fight? Because I'll tell you that Max Holloway would promote it, and Max Holloway's holding that gold that will look pretty good on those press conference tables when he's talking about it. Gold that Conor McGregor used to hold at 145.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the announcement, that Nate Diaz will get people out of bed on that one, but I don't think that's the fight to make. I think Max Holloway sells it.
I have the poll here, the final results, twitter.com/ESPN MMA. By the way, great emoji choice by whoever put out this tweet.
Mm.
Max Holloway, 43%, leading the way, almost 18,500 votes. Cowboy, 39%. So we have 43, 39. Nate Diaz way down at 14%. And Anderson Silva, 4%.
So I'm not surprised by those results because the people who follow that account are the hardest of the hardcore, right?
Yes. Yep.
I bet you if you would have done that poll on, say,
SportsCenter, Twitter,
I think Nate Diaz wins.
That's a great experiment.
Maybe yeah. Anderson Silva. Who knows? I'd be interested to
I think
see
Nate
that.
Diaz
New York
wins.
Hurt should make a phone call and make
yes.
that happen.
I think Nate Diaz people. Wins because everyone knows about that feud. And I'm, by the way, I'm not sitting here campaigning for that.
Sure.
I love the Holloway fight.
Yeah.
I said it 2 weeks ago that that's the fight that I would choose. I think eventually it ends up being Donald Cerrone. I think that that's probably the most winnable fight. But the Nate Diaz fight is the one that garners the most amount of mainstream interest, in my opinion.
Is it a realistic thing? Is Nate Diaz even interested in yeah. the picture on the table? Yeah?
Of course.
Well, there you go.
Why do you think he hasn't fought anyone else?
then I'd look, I'm not saying I'm not interested in Diaz. That's my number two. I don't want to rehash this, but I'm not particularly interested in Cowboy versus McGregor. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't see a story. I'm just not into it.
Right.
To me, Nate Diaz is number two.
I just want everyone to know that's New York Rick speaking.
That was not Ariel right. Helwani.
Okay. All right.
Donald Cerrone's a great fighter. Just not interested in that fight in particular. To me, Nate Diaz is number two, and I could be convinced if all of a sudden he starts making some noise and does come out of the tree that he's been hibernating in and and starts talking about Conor McGregor.
Okay, so hopefully we'll figure this out in the next few weeks. I want to turn our attention to this weekend, gentlemen, because this is a very busy weekend in the world of mixed martial arts. You've got two Bellator events. Bellator 215, 216 happening just an hour or so away from here at the beautiful Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. You've got Cage Warriors, you've got ONE, you've got LFA, you've got Invicta, and on Sunday you have the UFC first main card on ESPN, Francis Ngannou versus Cain Velasquez. I want to ask you, first things first, I am trying to ignore the fact that the biggest grudge match in UK MMA history, the biggest grudge match in Bellator history, that is happening this Saturday. Finally, we're getting MVP versus Paul Daly after years of back and forth.
In London.
I'm trying to ignore the fact that it's not happening in England.
Oh.
But I got to tell you, every time I just open the blinders a little bit and I remember that it's not happening in England, I'm bothered. I get annoyed. And it doesn't ruin the fight for me, but it pisses me off. You know what I mean? Look, I'm not going to the fight this Saturday. I wouldn't be going if it was happening in England. It just so happens to be my son's fifth birthday on Saturday, February 16th. So happy birthday to Walter. And I wasn't planning on going. But just watching it in England, watching the press conferences in England, watching the build up on fight week, you know, in England, in front of the Big Ben, a photo, like it just would have felt bigger. Am I hanging on to something here? Like at this point, should we just get over it and get excited about the fight, or am I onto something?
I would say short term for atmosphere, yeah, it would have been great to stage it in Newcastle a couple weeks ago when
yeah.
they were there, or last week. Like, yeah. It was last week. It was a week ago.
Yeah.
February 9th. My concern with that is, and I think it's why Bellator didn't do it, is that they want the live audience for a guy who could be their biggest star in Michael Page. He's the guy who they've been building for some time. Finally, he's getting an opponent who is, I'm trying to say this and be respectful. It's the toughest opponent he's faced, in my opinion, Paul Daly, comfortably. So for him, his first true test on a night where Bellator is not sharing the stage, they wanted that for the live, big U.S. primetime audience, and so that's why they put it Saturday night in Connecticut. But yeah, I mean, we both talked to the guys this week. I talked to them for the U.K. site a couple days ago, and they both said, yeah, I'm excited for it, but man, what a shame it's not in England. So they both feel the same thing.
We just saw this with Alimaleh McFarlane. If you put the fight in the right setting, the story tells itself, and they have botched this. There's no doubt in my mind that it doesn't matter. The window can move. Whatever it takes, you make that fight in the UK. So, I certainly don't think you're overreacting there. You have to do that fight there.
Does it ruin it for you a little bit?
No, because I'm not the audience that's going to ruin that for. I want to see that fight regardless. I'd watch it in the parking lot if they were willing to do it. So I'm watching. But wrong call, for
and
sure.
And Scott Coker was asked about this at the press conference last week, which they did do a press conference. By the way, Coker, I love Coker. I think he's great. But he was so uncomfortable sitting in between the two that he actually nixed the face-off. How do you not do a face-off? Get some security there. That actually builds the fight even more. Like you have these cops. Like how do you not do a face-off between these two guys who hate each other? They did a face-off earlier today in New York, And it was great. It was like the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen one where Paul was just facing forward and MVP did the Venom thing. I mean, these two legitimately hate each other. When I say it's the biggest grudge match in Bellator history, I'm not overselling it in my opinion. What's great about it is it was born in Bellator. It's not a grudge match that they took from the UFC or some other promotion. It all started in Bellator. It culminates in Bellator. And then you have the tournament. You have the belt eventually on the line. You have the $1 million from 50 Cent. You have all these things that just add to the stakes. You tell me that you couldn't find a venue? That's what Scott Coker said last week. We couldn't secure a venue. How is that possible? Especially you just said Newcastle last week. Mm-hmm. Now, these are different things because they have the European series and they have the DAZN thing. It's all very confusing stuff. But come on, guys. How do you not put – I mean, it's the biggest no-brainer of all no-brainers. And great point, Eric. I mean, you just had Aleem McFarlane in Hawaii. We had Robert Whittaker in Australia. Like, the fight game is all about putting guys in the best situation
GSP
possible.
GSP in Toronto.
Yes, yes. It really bothers me. It probably bothers me too much, but I gotta say, I can't get over it.
Take the money from 50 Cent and find yourself a venue somewhere in the UK.
Anywhere. And by the way, we're not talking about like, oh, here's Stipe Miocic. You know, the best spot for him is Cleveland. The Q is not available or whatever it's called these days. The Q, right?
Slim Pickens, yeah.
I was gonna say Gund Arena. But yeah, the Q. We're talking about England. Yep. We're talking about an entire country here.
You have Nottingham where Daly's from. Yeah. You have London, not a small city where Paige is from. Manchester would have taken it.
There's big arenas all over that damn country. And it's a great country.
Half of them are called the O2 Arena.
Yes. It's very confusing. Wembley here, O2 there. It just kind of, it gets me all fired up. But now, if I ignore that, I love it. And so let me ask you this. MVP Daily, Saturday night, huge grudge match. Everyone's in on it, right? Fun car, there's some other stuff. MVP Daily, main event versus the Sunday main event. And I want to remind everyone, you don't have to choose here, right? Right. Bellator's by itself on Saturday. UFC's by itself on Sunday. Which main event are you more into, MVP Daly or Ngannou Cain?
What are the qualifications for this question?
What are you more excited about?
Just if you have baseline to choose, level, I'm watching one only. I can only watch it.
Which
New
one
York
intrigues
Rick,
you?
Me, I am watching.
Which one intrigues
Ngannou
you more?
And Cain.
That's a bigger fight for you.
Yeah, to me that matters more. I think in the UFC's heavyweight division, neither of these guys is very far from a title shot. Now, obviously, Cain has its complications when we're talking about title opportunities. But one win for either guy, and they're right there knocking on the door. And to be honest, to me, the UFC's heavyweight belt means a lot more than a grudge match between Michael Page and Paul Daly.
$1 million.
Yeah, that part is not doing it for me. Love the fight, but if I'm forced to choose, it's going to be Sunday.
I agree, because if you were to tell me that this were a competitive fight, an entertaining fight, and that at some point in 2020, spring, summer 2020, this is a heavyweight title fight in the UFC, I would absolutely believe it. These guys are in a short list of best heavyweights on the planet, and there are few things in combat sports more exciting than a heavyweight title fight. So given the situation that Daniel Cormier is ready for his one for the road, these guys are one step closer to a title shot. Just by the fact of the champion is going to be walking away at some point in the not too distant future. So I'm going with Ngannou Velasquez because it's going to tell me who's probably at worst the number one contender, if not someone who's fighting someone for what would be an undisputed belt in 8 months to a year.
So you guys make this seem like this is just like a no-brainer of a question, but come on, it's not a little. I mean, here you have like a real grudge match. They truly hate each other.
I feel like this week Paul Daly's been soft on on his feelings. I don't know if he's
you're
as
not feeling
invested
it, huh?
In it personally.
Whoa!
I mean, he spoke to you. What's the sense that you got?
No, he did say that. But you know, sometimes
you would
fighters
think
want
that my hipster. The hipster in me would want to pick that fight. And again, don't get me wrong. Love the fight. Really do love the fight. But
isn't that kind of like when someone gets punched in a fight and it actually hurts, but they shake their head and say, no, that didn't hurt?
It's possible.
That's what I feel like he's doing.
He's wearing it well.
Yeah.
If it is. But regardless, I think matchup-wise, style-wise, it's a great fight, even if they don't hate each other. I don't need them to hate each other.
But to me, it helped the storyline that these guys are countrymen and they really hated each other. And I asked both of them, when you're preparing for a fight and there's legitimate animosity between you and an opponent, how does that affect your ability to stay disciplined once the door shuts? And both of them played down the animosity. Mm. Like that's your selling point, that you guys really, really hate each other. And they're playing it down. I mean, it's great that it's a welterweight Grand Prix fight and two fighters, Michael Page in particular, who's a lot of fun to watch. It's not that I wasn't going to watch that fight anyway, but I feel like when they came here and that was their unified message, that, oh, no, it's played up by the media. We really don't dislike each other as much as you guys say.
What?
That kind of took the luster off it for me a little bit. They both said that on the record.
I don't want to pile on.
Okay.
But consider the fact that they're flying overseas to now do Connecticut, to now do these media opportunities. If they're sleeping in their own beds, looking at that guy's face, hearing from that guy's fan every day, and they're in the UK and they're home, I think that animosity builds, and I think that would have been a perfect breeding ground for that fight to happen.
Especially if they're in the hometown of one. Say it's in London, and Daly's getting booed by a local crowd, that would really stir the pot.
There's no emotional investment in this fight here.
No.
Or even if they go to New York. I know New York, media capital of the world, no one cares. Let's be honest. I'd love to know how many people were actually there at the press conference today. And that's no knock. It's just there's a million things to do in New York and a million things to cover. This fight means nothing to New York, right? It means a hell of a lot to the UK. So that's actually a great point. I didn't think of that. Just the setting would have got their juices flowing a little more and made it seem even
more.
My
humble opinion.
Yeah. Wow. So both of you now have essentially told me that this is all work and there's no animosity there.
Listen, I can only go by what they've said. And this week, it doesn't seem that that's the line.
I wouldn't say that it's a work. I would say that they're being drilled over the last couple of weeks to not let their emotion get the best of them, probably by their teams.
Yeah.
And so when they're coming here and people like the three of us are asking them questions, trying to, really tap into that emotion, and they're fighting that off, saying, oh, it's not, you guys are making this more than it is. That was my thought, that he's trying to be trained and trying to be disciplined so that when the door does shut Saturday night here in Connecticut at the lovely Mohegan Sun Arena, that the best Paul Daly and the best Michael Page are standing off against each other.
What I love so much about this fight is that it's a civil war, right? It's very rare in this particular sport. You see it a lot more in boxing where it's countryman versus countryman, right? You don't see GSP fighting a fellow Canadian. You don't see Aldo fighting a fellow Brazilian for the belt. I know he just fought one, but when he was, when he was Jose Aldo, Bisping didn't fight a fellow Brit, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like taking, Conor, or Chris Weidman when he was champion fighting a fellow American and putting that fight in Brazil. It makes no sense. England is part of the story here, right? And people would have picked sides, especially if you went to one of their respective hometowns. And so to me, it has devalued the hype surrounding the fight. And I think that point by New York Rick is 100% spot on. So Friday, they've got Bellator 215. Saturday, they've got Bellator 216. And then you got the Phoenix card on Sunday on ESPN. And I have to say, I don't know how you guys feel. You look at the card from top to bottom. This is a better card than last week's pay-per-view.
Yes.
Like I would have had a problem paying 65. I would have had a problem paying 65 for that card last week. Right?
Agree.
It's not even close.
And if I'm a fan in Melbourne, I'm feeling a little hard done. When they canceled postponed UFC 233.
Yeah, postponed.
Postponed UFC 233 back in what? Early to mid-December? Those fights got distributed everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It got distributed here. It got distributed 235, Askren Lawler. 234 did not get a single redistributed fight from the preceding pay-per-view that was postponed.
That's a great point.
So, but this card benefited more than any other in that it got it filled out its depth really quickly with the fights that were postponed from Anaheim.
Most intriguing fight other than the main event?
I have two, so I'll let you go first.
Shameless plug.
Yeah.
UFC Destined.
Yes.
On ESPN has been following Crone Gracie and Alex Caceres. I am excited for that fight. I feel like, to me, it reminds me of why I started watching MMA in the first place. The fact of how, like, traditional martial artists, like how the level of martial artistry that they express in everything that they do, the lifestyles that they live. And how polar opposite they are in terms of their styles and their disciplines. I'm amped for that one. That is the one for me.
That was one of my two.
And can I just add to that? Because I know the international fans will get very annoyed that we're talking about an ESPN Plus thing because you can't have access to it. That's not on us. That's just the way the cookie crumbles here, and perhaps they'll make it available at some point. But the way that show is shot, and especially for Crone, all up in his face with the beard, like he looks like a samurai. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the way he speaks, and the way Alex speaks, Crone being the grandson of the great Helio Gracie, the son of Hickson Gracie, whose half brother Hoist Gracie was, the face of the UFC back in the day. And the fact, shout out to Jedi Goodman, legend on Twitter, the fact that this will be, if all goes to plan, and by the way, Try to say this word for me. 5,000th.
It's
okay, you did it. Try to say it.
1,000th.
It's almost impossible.
We both just said it perfectly.
I can't say it. 5,000th. I can't say it.
1,000th.
1,000th.
Just say 1,000.
1,000. 5,000. I think it's virtually impossible. Anyway, this will be that fight.
Yeah.
In the history of the UFC, this will be the 5,000th fight. That's just absurd, right?
Yeah.
If you know about Helio Gracie, the godfather of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then his son, Hickson Gracie, and then he has a son, Cron Gracie, and he's making his debut, a Gracie is going to be in that fight. That just blows my mind.
Please, MMA gods, keep the first nine fights together. We don't need anyone getting a collapsed bowel.
I know.
You've got to shift the order, even if if something happens.
Oh, yeah, that's actually the smart play. So pick a name in the ESPN Plus prelims portion of things. If someone doesn't make weight, gets the flu week of the fight, you move Caceres Gracie up and over.
Yeah.
Courtney Casey, Cynthia Calvillo would be the swap. And that's a no-brainer.
Okay, so Gracie Caceres, your other one was?
Jimmy Rivera, Aljamain Sterling.
Mm, yeah.
Just because it's a fight that neither guy can afford to lose in that bantamweight title picture that's toward the top. They both have losses to Marlon Moraes as they're trying to climb the ladder. There's that top tier at 135, and these guys are both in that second tier, and this is the guy you need to beat to get to that next one. They're both 29 years old in the prime of their careers, a whole lot of fun. We just saw Aljo pull off a Suluev stretch in Dallas, and Jimmy Rivera, I mean, he was on a forever win streak until Moraes beat him. So those were the two that got me geeked. One for the Gracie history, and Alex Caceres is always fun to watch, and the other one was Rivera Sterling. How about you?
Gracie Caceres, I'm all about. And I was pleasantly surprised because I know there's this new UFC Destined show, and the first one was about Dillashaw and Cejudo, and that's a no-brainer main event. So I figured, they'll just pick the main event of every card. And you pick, I think that's like the fourth card on the fourth fight on the main card, right?
Yes.
So like you pick, to me, it's like, wow, we're trying to build stars here.
It's a big opportunity for Cron, who's making his debut, and it's a big opportunity for Alex, who's kind of always been up, down, up, down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real spotlight on this fight because, you know, all due respect to Alex, but because of Cron's name. That's the reality of why this fight is big, is because of Cron's last name. He has a big opportunity
here.
But
Cron's really good.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this is a showcase for Alex Caceres. What I'm saying is he wouldn't get this spotlight if it wasn't for Cron's last name. And in this fight, he has a huge opportunity. But no, Cron Gracie's jiu-jitsu is as advertised.
I spoke to Caceres' manager, Abe Cowan, and he told me that he's never heard, something changed in Caceres recently, and he's never heard him speak like this before. That there, you know, in the past he was just kind of like floating through his career and something changed, and now he's incredibly focused. He's talking about going on a title run. Before, he never really cared about that sort of thing, so that has me intrigued. Cron finally coming to the UFC has me intrigued. You mentioned UFC 4 before.
Yes, last time. A Gracie.
Did you mention
won.
That? Because that had nothing to do with this, but was that just on
it
your
mind? It
was
in my mind. Okay. I did the IGTV UFC show, and that was
tell,
mentioned.
Tell the people the factoid.
That the last time a Gracie has won in the UFC was my 8th birthday.
Wow.
8th birthday.
Yes.
That's another one. December 16th, 1994.
Wow.
Both Alex Caceres and Cron Gracie were 6 years old the last time a Gracie has won in the Octagon. So in the 5,000th, I did it, 5,000th.
It's tough.
5,000th UFC fight ever. You have the chance for the first Gracie win in almost 25 years.
And who won that fight?
Hoist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Others have been in the UFC,
yes, others
right?
have been in the UFC.
Enzo, Hollis Gracie.
Yeah, it was the...
Neiman Gracie's doing good things for Bellator, but in the UFC, that's...
I think obviously it was Hoist's last UFC win because he had the draw against Shamrock UFC 5.
No, last UFC win, yes.
Yeah,
last
UFC.
But had the draw against Hughes.
No, he lost against Hughes.
Yes, that's correct. Sorry.
So that's a big deal. But I'll also throw out the James Vick fight against Paul Felder.
Mm-hmm.
If only because I love the psychology of the sport. And I remember when we spoke to James Vick after the loss to Justin Gaethje. Remember on the show, he was so down. He said he was disgusted. He said he was depressed. He was very open about his emotions, which I really appreciated. And he said he was like kind of worried that, look, I've been working so hard to finally get a main event. And I choked. I blew it. He was super honest, and I love that sort of thing. Like, that candor is amazing. And now he gets a chance. He doesn't get a main event fight, but it's not like they pushed him all the way down the prelims,
right,
which I think he was worried about. He's in the co-main event of a pretty important fight card. And so I'm very curious to see how he responds. Unless we forget, not that long ago, we were talking about Paul Felder being, you know, a name to look out for at 155. He didn't win a single fight in 2018. Now, he had horrible luck in Brooklyn. His fight was taken away from him. Then he had to move up to fight Mike Perry. Mm-hmm. But I feel like these are two guys who are in desperate need of a victory, and that always gets me excited.
Agree. And that's why that exact mentality is why I liked Rivera Sterling as, right. as my number one pick. But, man, this fight, top to bottom, like I said, I'll be at the All-Star game. My phone will be streaming. I'm going to have ancillary batteries and ready to go so I can stream all this on ESPN Plus and ESPN.
What's our level of expectation as far as Cain is concerned? 2.5 years away, back surgery, paternity leave.
The last time he came back, it didn't look like he missed a beat, so I'm not expecting a fall off or a drop off, rather. I'm expecting Cain that we have come to know and love every time he is in there. To me, it's not that Cain comes back and looks rusty. I don't think that you could ever state that's the case. I think Cain, when he's in the cage, is a monster and is absolutely incredible. When he's out, he's out. So I'm expecting if he is there on fight night, I'm knocking on everything we've got in here. I expect Cain Velasquez to look like Cain Velasquez.
True or false, Cain Velasquez wins the heavyweight title before it's all said and done again.
Oh, boy. Phil, why don't you go first while I ponder
this? I was gonna let you go first.
I am going to say true. I'm going to say true. I just think that's a title that's going to keep swapping hands. It's very hard to credit to Stipe Miocic for how long he was able to hold that title. It's not one that I expect to be held that long for a while. It all depends on the Daniel Cormier situation. Now this week saying potentially that timeline is extended beyond his 40th birthday. So I think it is true, but I don't know when. It's very difficult to pin down when because Cormier is kind of in control of that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think Cormier is going to stretch the 40 deadline to, say, 42. So I do think Velasquez will win the heavyweight title again at some point. The massive caveat is if he stays healthy. I mean, for him, it's been rotator cuff and knee and just down the line.
Back.
The bone spurs in his back. So, I mean, he looks like an operation table with all the different things he's got going wrong. But, man, this fight's at sea level. We get sea level Cain, the mythical creature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do like Cain in this fight, and I do like you start looking at other matchups of top heavyweights, and maybe I'm caught up on Cain from 2013. But again, he's only fought, what, two or three times since then? He's lost to Verdum, and then he won at UFC 200. So until I see otherwise, I'm not going to disbelieve in a guy who's 35, 36 years old, his ability to contend at a gym that's very well respected. I think Cormier would help him prep for any heavyweight fight, and what better training partner to have than a guy who's held belts at light heavyweight and heavyweight in the UFC. So I would say, yes, if I had to bet, I would say Cain will be a UFC champion at some point, maybe the next one after Cormier hangs it up.
We joke about C-level Cain or cardio Cain, but that is a real thing. He's unbelievable. Like, you know, he's an energizer bunny out there, third, fourth, and fifth round. To me, this is a real tough fight for Francis Ngannou. Like, if this fight goes past the first, I feel like we might see UFC 220 all over again with Cain's pace, right?
It's likely if it does go that long, but who's telling that it's going to go that long? Francis Ngannou.
He has to finish the fight in the first round, in my opinion. He has to catch him with an uppercut.
Second, it's got to be
second
early.
Gets dicey.
It's going to get, look, don't get me wrong. Like, Stipe Miocic laid out the game plan for how you counter Francis Ngannou, but in doing so, he took some shots that most people would not be able to stand up to. We're going to see if Cain Velasquez can. And that's what's intriguing about this fight. Francis Ngannou's power isn't just, you know, the jokes about Ford escorts. That is real. That is
that
legit.
Was a great line. That was like the most emotion we've seen out of Cain.
Yeah.
You talk to him about cars and make a somewhat questionable analogy. The guy gets all fired up.
That was the most animated he's been, for sure. But all jokes aside, Francis Ngannou's power is not a joke. That first round is going to be dicey. Cain has the tools to do it, but waiting in there against Francis Ngannou is a difficult proposition for anybody.
I just had a great social media video concept. I'll talk to you after the show. I don't want to give it away and have it get swiped.
And how about Cain Velasquez getting the opportunity to right the wrong from almost 8 years ago when he headlined the first Fox card, gets knocked out in
64 seconds?
Yeah. And is embarrassed and loses the belt. And now he gets to headline the first ESPN card, main card, that is.
Now you have me worried. There's going to be some weird symmetry there where he gets knocked out in 66 seconds.
He's back in Arizona. You know, he starred for Arizona State. This is a great opportunity for Cain Velasquez. The sport feels bigger when he's around, right? Like, he's a star. I don't care about how boring his interviews are or his personality. Like, he's a legit, he's a former champ. He beat up Brock Lesnar and all that stuff and more. This is a big deal.
Yeah, and I also, you know, let's be fair to Cain. It's not like Francis Ngannou is Mr. Personality on the other side of the coin. There's just some guys that you want to watch fight, and as we stated earlier, those two are two guys we want to watch fight.
Yeah, I mean, you forget how devastating some of Ngannou's knockouts have been. We were planning our Sports Center for Australia for later this week, and I'm going to be remote for it. And so they were showing me a lot of the video now, and we had this highlight rip of Francis Ngannou, and just, I mean, so many angles of Overeem's head just snapping back over and over and over again. It's one of the more devastating knockouts you'll see, especially from a fist. I mean, you know, Barbosa Edom is, you know, it's a kick. You know, Rousey Holm, it's a kick to the head. But the ability he's able to generate in his hands is just terrifying. And the angles from which he comes, it's this fight, it's one you're going to be on the edge of your seat for the first round, for the first minute or two of the second. And if it goes beyond that, then I'm with you. It tips heavily in Cain's favor.
We've got a potential repeat of your round of the year with Francis and Stipe. Now we've got another first round with Francis
Stipe
and Cain.
That was round of the year 2018. Guys, it has been a pleasure. A lot of fun. I enjoyed this trio very much.
Yeah.
I might get a call back even. What a fun weekend we have. This is my favorite weekend of the year, by the way. NBA All-Star Weekend, my favorite. And then you add two Bellator cards, one UFC card. You add all these other promotions. Invicta having a card, Cage Warriors. What do you want to say, New York Greg?
Any
you wanted Knicks to say something?
All-Star Weekend this year?
Dennis Smith in the dunk contest.
Ah, that's right, baby. Dennis
I think he wins the dunk contest.
I do, too.
This has turned into a different podcast.
Yes, but I love it. I love everything about it. And I'm just waiting to get the call for the celebrity game.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That's a bucket list item. I actually pitched it this year, believe it or not.
Okay,
I was
you
at.
Got to promise
you
me.
Were laughed at. Yeah. Rosillo was in it a couple years ago.
Yeah, who's Rosillo? What has he ever done?
If and when it happens, I need to be.
You'll
involved
be my
in
towel guy,
assistant. Oh, yeah. I'll do it. I'll do anything
boy.
To see that
water boy. Perfect. Done. All right, this weekend, huge two Bellator, UFC, ESPN, Sunday night, not Saturday. Sunday, 5:30 prelims on ESPN Plus, 7 o'clock prelims on ESPN, and then main card at 9 p.m. on ESPN. That is fun. Guys, great stuff. I appreciate it very much. Thanks to everyone who has been listening, downloading, rating, reviewing. Fastest growing podcast at ESPN. That's what they tell me. Back next week. We have a lot to talk about, I'm sure, after a crazy weekend coming up. There's always things going on in this sport. For now, we are out of time. For Phil, for New York Rick, I'm Ariel. For Daniel, the great producer back there.
Woo!
Appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week.